Welcome back to The Edit, your edit of What's What in the Gulf. You see, I told you I'd come up with a tagline for this issue.
How many hours?
Very special episode.
I mean, honestly, I haven't slept all night. That's fair. Actually in, as you said, for a very special episode this week. So stay tuned to hear that. But of course, it wouldn't be the edit without myself, Matthew Baxter Priest, and my two esteemed and wonderful editors on Esquire, Mr. William Mullally and Mr. Nasri Atala. How you doing, boys?
Hello.
Doing very well.
Good, good.
Thank you for having me back.
I mean, it was touch and go after last time.
I mean, I think it's mandated, if I'm honest, at this point. We've got to give the fans what they need. How's the week been, everyone? What are they? The day is middle of the week, and we're going into a big one this weekend.
Oof, like in so many different ways, too.
So much going on. There's way too much. I feel like I say this every week. It's too much going on. The city's insane.
Honestly, I think a little boring traffic chat. I swear, on Monday I was in 2.5 hours of traffic.
Really?
And that was on multiple different occasions. Just adding to that overall list of traffic that I've been in this week, it's going nuts, honestly. Yeah.
I think we thought, oh, everyone's going to be in Qatar. And then it's like, no, they're going to be here. Mm. They're all here. Everyone's here.
Do day trips to Qatar.
On the road.
You remember when we thought, yo, Expo's going to bring in like loads of people. Turns out Expo brought in loads of people.
But they stayed.
Yeah, they stayed and they just keep on coming. So I think the goals of Expo have been good if it was trying to highlight Dubai as a global destination.
Yeah,
absolutely. But please take a different road when I'm driving. That's my only request.
I've discovered like 20 years into the game, I've discovered the functionality on Google Maps, which is avoid motorways. Because I'd much rather be stuck on like a 2-lane road than an 18-lane road. So that's my new thing. That's my new escape. It's my treat.
Minimizing psychic torment.
Yeah. Honestly, I'm going through like real dark moments in my brain in these traffic jams. I mean, like, in my head, I'm canceling all of Google. I'm just like, Google Maps, you've led me astray. I'm downloading the Waze app.
Everyone says Waze, by the way.
It's not Google's fault that there's traffic, but for some reason, I'm stuck in it, and therefore, it's obviously not my fault.
I think they're fine. I think we can blame them for stuff. They'll be fine.
I'm going to go Bing Maps. I don't even think it's a thing. I'm going to start it.
Apple Maps? I'll be your first download, I'll tell you. Yeah, Big Maps, that should be a thing. Right, well, let's move swiftly into our first segment called News, Views, and Shoes. Right, well, what has been going on through everyone's inboxes this week, guys? What do the people need to know? What are they craving for?
Where do we start, honestly? There's so many different things happening right now. We have the entire world of football coming through Dubai, not just the fans, but the players are going to be here. You know, we have Messi in Argentina trading in Abu Dhabi, and we're going to have gigantic club games. We're going to have the Dubai Super Cup with Lyon, with AC Milan, with Liverpool and Arsenal all facing off all throughout December. Tickets just went on sale. So I think those are already like being snapped up because honestly, we thought that things would just be happening over there. I didn't realize this much would be happening here.
Yeah, so it's a mad kind of counter-programming thing, isn't it? Because even with those teams that you mentioned, you know, there are some absolutely world-class and star players that aren't going to be playing at the World Cup, unfortunately. The likes of Mo Salah, who will obviously be here with Liverpool. Obviously, huge fan base, but you know, one of the top five best players on the planet that we can watch just playing here, regardless of everything going on in the World Cup. No stakes.
Fantastic.
Have you got tickets yet?
I've got tickets for the World Cup now. So we'll go over there, maybe England, Wales, maybe the games after. We'll see what happens. I believe the UAE Cup, is that what it's called?
Dubai
Super Cup.
Well, there you go.
Right?
We need some tickets for that.
Sure, with no Dubai teams. But hey, naming is naming. Who knows? Played That's here.
Good. Yes.
What do you got on your radar now?
This might not be very universal, but I turned 40, which I'm still struggling with.
Marbrook?
My wife is like, I can't believe I'm married to a 40-year-old. Like, it's like, she was a bit disgusted, I think.
Way to make it about yourself. great stuff.
I'm like, yeah, I am 40. So now I have to, like, you know, every time I'm like, would the 40-year-old do this? Would I go to this event in my 40s? So that's where I've been this week.
Existential crisis.
Midlife crisis. Let's see what happens. Buy Twitter.
Yeah, look, I'll take midlife for being in my 40s because that means at least you got another 40 years to go. Right? I'm not convinced I do, let's be honest. To be fair, this means that now you're in your 40s. Now you have a deeper appreciation of Judd Apatow films.
Yes, I did Google This Is 40.
Sure. And
that's a Judd Apatow film.
That is? Right?
Yeah, there you go. Has terrible rating. I remember it being fun. I don't know. Maybe I was...
He gets very navel-gazy, which I guess is what you do at 40. Yeah, but people under 40 are like, why are you talking about being 40? Stop this.
Hence me talking about being 40 as the main piece of news of the week.
So it's accurate. It's true to life.
There you go.
Judd gets it.
This is 40.
So for one interesting bit of news that came out related to the food and beverage industry, predominantly here in the UAE, is there was earlier this week, there was the launch of a thing called the UAE Champagne Index.
Nice.
Now, I know the kind of reporting on food and beverage and alcohol and things generally tends to be a bit gray area, I suppose. But mm-hmm. this has actually been a published website that monitors the pricing of from 42 different fine dining restaurants and the pricing of champagnes mm-hmm. that they and it's broken down via brand. So whether it's Moët, whether it's Crew, whether it's Bollinger, and it's basically to try offer a bit more transparency to the pricing that you would pay in restaurants and things. So it's kind of giving back to the diner, especially in a time in the world and here in the UAE when pricing is just spiraling. Cost of living is going up. We all seem to be paying more for everything all the time. I think this adds try, or at least is a start to try to add a little bit of balance to it. So I'm kind of into this. But can you guess according to the guide mm-hmm. or the index, how expensive the most expensive bottle of champagne you can order within these 42 restaurants is?
See, that's the thing, because we're including... You know, things that have been, you know, top shelf sitting in the back gathering dust, or is this just the regular movers?
No, I have written down in front of me here in sparkling blue pen the amount, but it is a vintage bottle of Krug. Mm. In dirhams, what are we thinking? Are we thinking 10K? Are we thinking 20K? Are we thinking 30K, 40K?
I'm going to say 15.
15,000 dirhams.
I'd go high. That's like the price of a vodka tonic in Dubai. I don't know. I would go like 50K.
50,000 dirhams. You're slightly overshooting it here. It's 35,000 dirhams.
Okay.
According to this index.
Bargain.
42 restaurants that were reviewed on it. And so it's run by the fine dining reviewing guy, Goemio. Mm-hmm. So 50-year history in France and launched in the UAE back in April. So the guys know what they're talking about, especially when it comes to champagne, according to this one. You can buy that 35,000 dirham bottle of vintage Krug at Atmosphere in the Burj Khalifa.
Well, I can.
The thing is, if I went downstairs, though, to the hotel, am mm-hmm. I spending 15 on that exact same bottle? That's the question.
I think you are. so maybe not in the exact same.
I go up the elevator. I've lost 20K.
I mean, you're going to the highest restaurant in the planet, so a lot of it. It's dining. You pay for value is what someone's willing to pay for it, right?
True.
So whether this thing is worth 35,000 dirhams is not really for me to say. I wouldn't pay for it. I don't drop 35K on champagne.
Sure. Yeah. But I might check the index and see where I can get that same bottle.
Exactly.
For a different price.
Exactly. But it's an interesting thing. It's something that hasn't existed here in the market before. Will we start seeing more of it? As guys who work in the media, that is interesting.
Yeah, it would be interesting when it's like across all kinds of beverages, different sure. places. Like it would become like... it's a cool first step like towards something bigger, I think.
Local water index. I could use that. Sometimes I'm like, guys,
my Dubai.
Why am I paying 30 for my Dubai right now?
Honestly, straight up. I remember earlier this year, every February, as you guys know, is a food month for us at Esquire. And I jokingly wrote a piece called the Black Cod Index. It was referencing the fact that basically any restaurant you go to in Dubai, whether it's Chinese or Italian or Indian, they serve black cod.
Nice.
Because people order black cod.
Because Nobu invented it, basically, and so everyone had to copy Nobu.
100%.
Yeah.
Or people will go to an Italian restaurant and be like, oh, where's the black cod?
Yeah.
And it's like, oh my God. So the joke was like, if you need to review all restaurants on a base, you just review them on the burrata, the black cod, probably the tiramisu or the cheesecake, maybe a sushi platter.
It's like the Big Mac.
The
Big Mac index.
It's the Big Mac index, exactly. Yeah. So if we can start getting these things comparable, maybe we can stop prices kind of spiraling out of control here in the city.
I feel like we've passed peak burrata and we've entered peak why is there caviar on this? Why is this? Okay. All right.
It's a yuzu. Is that a thing?
That's a thing.
Everyone puts yuzu on stuff here. Mm-hmm. That's like the thing. Like, let's bump this up 50%. Let's just like put some yuzu on this.
We're going to have a new ingredient by 6 months from now. Promise.
You know what? Maybe I'm jumping ahead here, but certainly a strong opinion loosely held that I have, which we won't touch on now, but is matcha.
Mm.
That can just get the bleep out as far as I'm concerned.
Because people don't do it right. Not a fan. That's the main thing. Yeah. No, you're just saying no matcha.
Just no matcha at all.
No matcha.
If you got a really good matcha, though, it's the best. Truly.
Maybe. Yeah, where have I got to go for the best matcha?
Japan.
Probably Japan or my kitchen.
Oh, where? Sorry.
I did like a little master class on how to do it right. And then ended up spending way too much money on all the pieces because he's like, you don't have a bamboo whisk? You need a bamboo whisk. I'm like, I need a bamboo whisk. I spent like £40 on it. Why did I do this? But I use it because I had to commit to it. I'm like, okay, I'm a matcha master now. We're doing this. So I'm going to come in. I'm going to bring the matcha. I'm going to make you guys matcha. Change your mind.
Fun.
Well, there you go. So best matcha in town is either Japan or Will Mullally's house.
It's true.
Yeah? Queues around the block. One thing that's important to jump into now is, of course, our new regular. It's the Elon Musk watch.
Mm.
What's Elon been up to this week, everyone? I'm sure he's been up to something.
Well, the real thing is, I think last week the main thing was everyone imitating Elon Musk.
Yes.
But now that Twitter Blue has been fully out and in its full glory, where people have the ability to pay $8 and put a blue check mark next to their name, people have been imitating anyone that they want for $8, having a glorious 15 tweets in the sun, and then being thrown into that sun, I guess, basically.
And like wiping off billions, like someone went in as like Lockheed Martin and tweeted something, and like their stock value dropped by 20% in a day or something like that. Like it has happened to multiple companies.
Lilypad,
like they announced stuff as these companies and like they wipe billions, which for $8 is very good value, honestly.
Yeah,
and that trolling is magnificent.
A lot of times, like for example, the company that charges, you know, 100 times what insulin should cost everywhere else in the world, in the US for some reason it's insane prices. They're like, it's free now. And then it's just the entire stock. And the funny, the best part is not the tweets that are, you know, naming and shaming these companies for these practices. The best part is when they have to come back on and be like, these are values we don't stand for. We believe everyone should pay 100 times more than anyone else in the world for insulin. These are our true values. That's the best part. The apology for their stakeholders, which is, you know, upsetting everyone else in the world, is so much fun.
My favorite moment was Elon Musk, he like zoomed into a conference somewhere in Indonesia, I think. I don't know. It was some conference where he was on a big screen. And for some reason, he hadn't switched on any lights in the room he was in. So it was just his head like floating in darkness at this conference. And I heard someone, Scott Galloway on his podcast say like, it looks like it was on trial in the future. Like it just like was this big disembodied head floating and saying, I'm really way too busy. My only thought was like, why are you making yourself CEO of everything then? Like, just hire people.
Dude's just entered like the third Planet of the Apes sequel with that weird council. So just what's happening.
100%. Isn't like it's full Wizard of Oz mode. Like floating head.
Yeah, it's so good.
He had like a red light on his face. I don't know. It just looks so weird. I'm like, are you doing this on purpose? Like this.
And then he's just like coming out with proclamations. And then one of his employees will be like, actually, the speed is actually this. You know, the guys behind the scenes are just getting frustrated on him not understanding the product.
Sure.
And so this happened this week as well. This guy was they were having a normal discussion about, you know, the speed optimality of Twitter on Android. And then he's just like, yeah, this guy's fired. It's like, you've talked to me too much. Please leave this company.
Jesus.
So the big question is, where is he this week? Are we sliding him up the evilometer to good, or is he staying on the evil side? I think it's good. He's brought comedy back. He told us we'd bring comedy back. Just probably not the comedy that he thought.
Yeah.
I don't think it's quite the monkey's paw, I think. It truly has.
I'm going with he gets nudged into the good side in this one, or actually that last thing you just said is or the giant floating head.
I'm still on the stupidometer. Like I've got my own. It's a different. I've got axis. My own scale. Yeah.
It's like a different XY
exactly,
axis.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Fair.
Yeah, it just makes no sense.
So is he getting? Is it more ridiculous or more serious now on your stupidometer?
Well, I think if you own, I guess no one owns Twitter stock now. Everyone got their payout. But if you enjoy using Twitter, it's kind of dark because it does seem like he's already said bankruptcy's on the table. He's burned through all the cash that they had when they had $2.12 billion in the bank when he bought it. No. That's all gone. He just pocketed it. Now he's like, now we're broke. Let's see how much longer this app can even last, and the Sherrod can even last. Because I guess that's really the dark sign. I don't know how much longer.
Like, people are all like, oh, well, you know, it was great knowing everyone. And you know, like, everyone's already kind of like saying their goodbyes.
Yeah, people are posting their CVs. Like, yeah, here's how to email me.
Okay, well, I guess even if this survives, like, people are kind of already decided they're leaving, so it's kind of hard to keep them on once they've decided. And it's not that many people on there when you think about it compared to other platforms. So all it takes is like a significant, like if everyone I follow kind of stops using it, like I'm not going to be on there anymore too much.
Yeah, but not a single person has said, let's go to Facebook. That's the main thing.
Yeah.
One person.
Everyone keeps saying Mastodon.
Yeah, they can just join my mom on Facebook. Liking people's birthdays.
Yeah, that's the thing, is you can't get anyone back. That's the most interesting thing I think about the way social media has unfolded. If people leave a platform, they do not go back to that platform. Like when Justin Timberlake tried to buy MySpace and make MySpace cool again. We left MySpace behind. Sure. It always has to be the next thing. Sure. So we'll see what that next thing is going to be.
Somewhere, I can't remember where, but like, it was about like how this is the end of social media and how social media never made sense anyway, because we weren't supposed to be talking to this many people all the time. And being this like positively or negatively reinforced or whatever every day. And so like this is the end. I mean, obviously, like I think, you know, we love a good think piece that like
it's a very Fukuyama kind of
End of history moment. But
writing it. We'll be writing this on Esquire, by the way, I think. this is a
end of history.
End of history, end of digital history. You know what? I'm not the greatest fan. You guys know me pretty well. I'm not the greatest fan of social media. So if Elon Musk is working as a COVID agent to slowly bring down Twitter and social media in it, I think the guy's ultimately a force of good.
There you go. Yeah.
Maybe he's more Anakin than he is Darth.
Wait until he tries to get us on that ship to Mars and we make it about halfway. That's going to be the most fun.
I'm staying here.
Well, thanks very much for that, guys. Any more news, views that we must know, need to know?
Well, I mean, on the, I guess, William talks to celebrity side of news.
Sure. it's my favorite type of news.
It's the best news.
We did have fun with Chris Hemsworth here over the weekend, which was just absolutely ridiculous because it's just he's such a big star, like true A-list. Mm. And the thing is, especially for these sorts of conferences, you get, you know, legacy guys, you get nostalgia guys, you get someone up and coming, what have you. Then it's just Chris Hemsworth. And so just the magnetism was off, I think, for a minute because no one really knew how to behave. I don't think he knew how to behave. His like social awkwardness was super duper fun. Like I was leaving and I was just like, have a good trip, man. He's like, you too, mate. I mean, you're not going on a trip, but I'm going on a trip. But if you go on a trip, have a good trip, mate. Like,
was that your Aussie accent?
That was my Aussie accent. I tried to not do it too hard, give you a little flavor of it. I did an impression yesterday of James McAvoy,
Yeah.
In which, because I met him in 2009.
In Scottish?
Outside of a play. Yeah, but I wasn't prepared for his accent the first time I met him.
Sure.
Because he's always has that, you know, like Professor X kind of Patrick Stewart accent in movies. Whereas in real life, he did this movie called Starter for 10, which is based on a book about University Challenge.
Mm-hmm.
Brilliant. Great. It's a great movie. And I was just like, I love that movie. And he's like, I loved it too, but no one fucking saw it. And I'm just like, geez, James McAvoy. Why do you sound like this? So I had to tell him this story.
I think that was Willie the Groundskeeper. That you just
That's James McAvoy. That's who he's based on. He is Groundskeeper Willie.
But he also had some nice things to say about your physique. I saw that video.
whoa, what's this? I missed this.
I think he's like looking at Will going, we met, you know, like a couple of years ago, but like you weren't looking this like scrapping, like this magnificent physique of yours.
Yeah, you are looking good at the moment.
Thank you, I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Well, once I got that Chris Hemsworth stamp of approval, it's like, all right, I can just stop going to the gym now.
Yeah.
I hit it, did it, okay.
That's in your Tinder bio.
We'll go back to whatever Chris I looked like before.
You know that Chris Hemsworth turned around from that exchange and he was just like, what did I say then? Because no matter how big or famous you are, whether you're Hemsworth or Musk or Obama or you, no one wants to be like the, hey, you good trip. No, you're not on a trip. I fail. Everyone walks away in an awkward situation.
Yeah, the awkward Thor that they moved into once Taika Waititi came in is a documentary.
Strong. Right, boys. That concludes this section. Let's move on to the main event. Right, so we're back with a very special main event this week, and it is all due to the fact that this weekend up in Abu Dhabi is the final Grand Prix of the season. Obviously, the traditional end-of-season Grand Prix is the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix up at Yas Island, and being Esquire, we tend to it's a time where we tend to flex our muscles a bit. Our editor-in-chief, Nasri Atallah, went down to speak to the world champion Red Bull Racing team drivers. First up, you'll hear a clip of his interview with Sergio Perez, and then with the newly crowned driver's champion for the second time, Max Verstappen.
You fly Vegas, Abu Dhabi. And then you... So you basically do Sao Paulo, Vegas, Vegas, Abu Dhabi.
Wow. That's very logical.
Very
good. But how do you deal with that? Like, because obviously you're training and you're eating well and you're doing all the normal stuff a sports person would do, but like a normal sports person wouldn't be going around the planet on that schedule. So like, how do you like even mentally like realize where you are right now?
Yeah, mentally, it's a lot of traveling. You know, it's a lot of commitments. Mm-hmm. It's not just the traveling; it's that everywhere where you go,
there are talk to people like me.
Exactly. And a lot of commitments, generally. Mm.
And obviously you have like a family, and I was just listening actually on the way here to the podcast where you were saying like, it's become more difficult since you've had children to like be away from home. And like, how do you, does it like limit your drive to?
Yes, I think when you have kids, you wanna, and you really have to balance it out, you know, whether it's, because it's not like you can, once you're done with it, you can, just go back on time and you know, time really passes on and it's something that when you have kids you really think about, you know,
the future
and how long you want to keep going and so on. So,
what's the conclusion?
I got another 2 years, you know, and it really depends, you know, how the next years go in terms of races, in terms of family time and so on. And then we'll see what happens afterwards.
So the ambition for next year would be to... What is the ambition for next year?
To win the championship. That's the target.
Yeah. Yeah. Because you've always been like, you know, strong teammate, etc. But like if you say like you only have, not a couple of years left in F1, but like a couple of years that you know what your runway is. So that's now like the target locked on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. That's really it. I know that I don't have that many years left, you know. Mm. So yeah, I wanna do it well. I make the most out of the next years, you know. Because yeah, I don't wanna definitely stay in the sport until 40 or something.
Mm-hmm. I just turned 40, really. It's not fun.
it's a good age. Yeah, but you know, we've been doing this for many years, so I'm also have a lot of other interests in that.
Mm-hmm. Like what?
Business in general, yeah. Away from the sport, yeah.
Like
next chapter, you know.
Entrepreneur?
Yeah, correct.
Is that like your dad, busy?
No, my dad is into politician. I have no interest in that.
But he's business, you know, he's not a businessman as well?
Well, he also does business. Yeah, but something more under there right now.
Because he's also like, he's become like a fan favorite, like in the paddock and stuff. I get really happy when I see him like walking around. Yeah. And like, what, like, does that happen? Is he here this weekend? No, really?
He's not, but you never know.
You never know.
He literally took.
He just shows up.
Even though, yeah.
He seems like a force of nature.
Yeah.
And like, there's obviously like a bunch of races in the region now. And, like, how does it differ racing here? Like, you're just saying it's super hot today, for example. Like, how do the conditions differ in the like four races now, like next year in the region? From other like races in Europe or the US or South America? Like,
it's
is
super
there a specificity?
Cool. It's super cool, to be honest. I really enjoy it. I really have good fun in this area.
Mm-hmm.
So it's nice, you know, and I think it also helps these countries.
Mm.
To open it up to the world and see that they're definitely moving forward, you know, with human rights and stuff like that. And it's nice to see, you know, and we obviously need to keep doing more. But it's great that we come in this area of the world, people are really relaxed, really having a good time.
flat out from the time I landed. So.
Oh yeah, when did you land?
Was it 10 o'clock? Oh, yeah, wow. This morning.
You look good for someone who just landed from across the world.
15-hour flight, so.
It's insane, right? And it's only going to get more hectic next season, right?
Yeah, step by step, more.
Three more races or something?
I'm not a big fan of it, but we have to deal with it.
Sounds like no one's a big fan of it.
No, I think, you know, we already have some really great locations, you know, and I think what I already feel sometimes is that people get a bit, not bored, but keep riding the same stuff because the season is just ongoing and, you know, it's just the same story over and over.
Yeah.
I think at one point when you make it too much, it's not what you need.
Yeah. And I mean, a lot of them are in the region here as well. Like, there's like four, I think, next year, the region.
Yeah, but I mean, we love coming here.
Yeah, I'm sure.
It's just also other places, you know, now like adding. And I think it's sometimes you can take a few off, which are not that interesting.
Mm.
But yeah.
You're not going to say which ones.
No, but I mean, we all love coming here. It's a beautiful place. Yeah. And it's been now on the calendar already for a while, you know.
Plus, I guess it has a special place in your heart, like given like what happened last year.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, already, you know, winning twice here, it's for sure. It's a special place.
And obviously, like last year, you won the championship, like in this kind of, super dramatic last minute, you know. But now you've won with like a few races to go. Does it feel different winning
it that way?
Yeah.
I mean, last year you knew that the pressure was still on. You had to perform flat out. You had to be on it. Now, of course, I want to win. I'm still going to do, of course, the best I can. But there's no real pressure to it.
Well, thanks very much for that, Naz. And you can, of course, read more about those on EsquireME.com. So now we move on to our final segment. As always, it's called Strong Opinions, Loosely Held. But it's a special one. Again, it's a very special episode, this one, because we're introducing another voice into the pod. Editorial intern Tamu Madi will be joining us because I've gotten a strong opinion, and I believe it's something that you might be quite opinionated on yourself, or at least know a bit about. So you're going to be joining in with the other guys. My opinion is that, without question, cheese and onion is the best flavor of crisp. And this is particularly relevant today because Tom has just been working on an exclusive for Esquire Middle East on EsquireME.com about the heritage and the passion that the country has for chips Oman.
Mm-hmm.
My question to you, buddy, is there a cheese and onion flavor of chips Oman? And am I wrong? Try prove me wrong.
All right. So there is no onion flavor of chips Oman. That's preposterous. Chips Oman is exclusively a chili flavored potato chip that has multiple applications.
What's your first memory of chips Oman?
Yeah.
What's your first memory of chips Oman? Sorry, I was away from the microphone there.
So I grew up here in Dubai, and you can't grow up in Dubai without living on chips Oman for a period of your life. So I guess just growing up, going to different bakala, like markets and stores here, it's all you'd find on the shelf. It's like a easy 2 dirham meal.
Now it's like this fancy, people use it in like, on all types of food, and like it's become like this foodie thing.
The chips Oman sandwich is like the most iconic meal on Beach Road.
I need to have one of those.
Yeah. You do, you really do. But inside back to like a paratha, so good. Mm-hmm.
So if it's the most iconic meal on Beach Road, the question is, where does the best chips Oman? What do you mean it's the best? Like the chips Oman sandwich. So what is that? Is this just bread, chips, or crisps?
Bread, chips, hot sauce, and cheese. You can't get it wrong, but some places get it really right.
It's the thing.
What's the best?
Or you can go to like Three Fills and get it, you know, pay 180 dirhams for... the same chips, like on top of something, and I'll order it because it's that good.
Chips Oman Index,
is that the Chips Oman Index? You see, that's why they pay you the bucks. You I like this.
But back to the what was it?
Back onion? To the strong opinion.
Yeah,
cheese and onion.
Cheese and onion,
unequivocally the best thing.
Mm. So,
but okay, which one's your favorite, Tamer? Out of all of Dubai,
There's a lot of good ones, but often the best ones are in the most unassuming places. These cafeterias on Beach Road. There's a cafeteria called El Faroeina. I'm not sure if I'm saying that right. It's a 4 dirham sandwich, and it's the best I've found so far.
I need to. My mouth is watering thinking about it.
You know what we're doing, right? We're getting in the Three Phils one, and we're getting in Thomas Ferrer one. And,
blind test.
Yeah, blind testing.
There you go.
On Kate, our art director, because it's all vegan, right?
It's cheese, no?
Ah, maybe the cheese.
Is there cheese in there?
Yeah, there's cheese spread on
it. I love how people never understand what vegan is, but there's just cheese in here. No, I'm vegan. Yeah, but there's no meat.
Yeah.
All right, fair. But cheese and onion, okay, well, let me put it a different way. Is there a better flavor than cheese and onion?
So as a 40-year-old.
a newly every baptized 40-year-old,
I feel like I've graduated into my next like life stage of crisp, which is like the Tyrrells, you know, whatever. I don't know how you pronounce that.
Right.
You know, like the fancy
like
chip.
Like a gourmet crisp.
Yeah, or the Torres truffle chips.
Slightly too thick, slightly too crunchy.
Yeah, chips, the Tyrrells, like sea salt and black pepper, you know, like very civilized, like I'm having, you know, dinner party with friends type of crisps.
Yeah. You're investing in these crisps.
Yeah. Unless it's a bad day and I'm having like hula hoops on my fingers and like Quavers. Do they still make those? I don't know. But no, cheese and onion, salt and vinegar, if anything. If we're going classic crisps, we're going salt and vinegar.
Well, that's the thing. My friend Hueda's dog loves only salt and vinegar crisps.
This is very random.
Okay.
She can be eating anything, but if there's salt and vinegar crisps, the dog goes insane and must eat all the salt and vinegar crisps. I don't understand it.
So you're saying this is like an independent adjudicator? The dog is there decided. Because it's not like
it's not
corrupted by like human marketing, color appeal of packaging, brand awareness. But I want to go into this because it's more gourmet crisp
fancy
approach,
chip.
Right? So black cod crisps, burrata crisps. Are we getting there? Dubai? Huh?
I would. Chips Dubai. Chips Dubai.
I'm no longer hungry for that sandwich.
No.
My poor stomach.
I would try. I'll try any kind of crisp.
So classier crisp for Nasri. Will, where are you at, mate?
I think I'm going with the dog. Going for the salt and vinegar. Basic Lay's, maybe even a Pringle. Finger stuck in there.
Cheese and onion Pringle, I'll make an exception for.
You see, well, that maybe the sour cream and onion Pringle, I think.
Sour cream, absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, really I could accept that. I think the idea of me being with my Italian heritage, I think onions are like a paramount, it's a staple for pretty much every meal. Raw onion, fine. Red onion, easy. Shallots, anything. Like. And then cheese. You got to have cheese in the crisp. Cheese and chips, cheese and potatoes. That's like a, you know, that's God's food right there. Cheese and chips, right? In any religion, in any place in the world. So I'm just saying cheese and onion on a crisp, fundamental. Fundamental. I'm sure it's part of the pyramid.
I feel like it needs a dip.
Yeah?
I think like that needs a dip. But those would be dip resistant. Because you need a Dorito, you need like a thick chip for a
Dorito.
For Doritos.
But again, the Dorito, you go with the cheesy flavor.
Who would?
I had a cousin who was dip resistant.
Yeah,
yeah, it's tragic, truly.
No.
Not even sure though.
This is the worst place to go to Mexico with.
Yes, that's the point of the podcast.
Honorable mention for Doritos.
Honorable Doritos.
Yeah.
I like the. I like. You know what? You nearly had me changing my mind at the hula hoops on your fingers. The hula hoop with the whole like the that thing. That's just nostalgia wrapped up in a little ring.
And it was just original flavor, whatever that meant. It was just like original. Sure.
I'm not convinced if your friend Wade's dog has convinced me, or maybe when I'm 40 in a couple of years, maybe I'll go to your side, but I'm sticking to cheese and onion. Actually, you know what though, Tama? I'm going to give you the final one. Chips Oman is it's a solid order, and it's kind of hard to break.
We're repping your region.
Yeah, you need a bit of chili in there, and it's a great crisp.
Done, Joe. Chips Oman.
All right, dude. Well, listen. Thank you, Tama. Thanks for joining us. Congratulations on your debut on the Edit podcast. Other guys
and everyone, go check out his. He has a couple of pieces about Chips Oman on the site, where you can find those sandwiches and like the bit of the history of Chips Oman and how the hell it became this like staple here.
Yeah, honestly, it's great pieces. It's great knowledge, and it makes you hungry. So just before we leave, Tom, are you first? Do you want to get your plugs in? Where can people find you on social media or read your writing?
EsquireMiddleEast.com. Find my stuff there.
There you go. And with that, he means EsquireME.com. But that's fine. Don't worry, buddy. It's all good. It's all
You're good. Fired.
Yeah. And you know what? As homework for all you listeners, you can find him on social media and stalk him out and tell him your thoughts on the best chips on places. I am at Mr. Pika on all social medias. Will, Naz, want to get your plugs in?
At WH Mullally. Find us. And at Nasri Atala. I'll fill that in for you.
Thanks. Cheers.
And as always, at Esquire ME and at Esquire Middle East on all social media. This has been The Edit. You can tune into us every midweek. Have a good weekend, guys. Enjoy the Formula One. Enjoy the World Cup. Busy time. Stay safe on those roads.
Cool.
Peace.